You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pōhō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
So, I have today on the international desk news from the subcontinent. Woo! Something I've always wanted to say, news from the subcontinent. Pakistan has had an election. There's been a result. And what I kind of want to do with this piece is sort of introduce you to who the new Prime Minister Imran Khan is, what he's all about, what he's going to do, and just give you a little bit of a background on Pakistan and how the politics of the place work.
Some historical context. I learned so much about New Zealand, funny enough.
Okay, I'm going to do one of my famous disclaimers, which is more of to allay confusion. When I talk about Indian Muslims before 1947 and Pakistanis after 1947, they are the same people. But Indian Muslims after 1947 are different. Indian Muslims today are not Pakistani. They are different, and Pakistanis will claim otherwise, and Indians will claim otherwise, but Indian Muslims are Indian, so that's a thing.
Okay. Yeah. You ready to go?
Let's go.
The people of Pakistan have spoken out loud and clear. They've picked Imran Khan as their new captain. Imran Khan's Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party has taken a comprehensive and unbeatable lead over Nawaz Sharif's Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz and Bilawal Bhutto Zardari's Pakistan's People Party in a three-cornered contest. But Imran Khan knows it's a tricky wicket ahead. Pakistan's economy is on the brink. The country is facing global heat on Pakistan's state-sponsored terror. And Islamabad's relations with India are at an all-time low.
As Pakistan celebrates the election of its new Prime Minister Imran Khan, the country and its larger neighbour India wait with trepidation to see how he will transform his long-suffering homeland, as expressed by that India Today report. Amidst fears the country was becoming more authoritarian, Khan looks set to take Pakistan in a new direction, strengthening relations with China and building a modern, thriving economy. However, the nation still faces a series of tough challenges as India and China both vie for dominance as global industrial powers, and the United States discusses taking a more isolationist role towards foreign policy. So, who is the recently elected Prime Minister? What are his policy positions, and what challenges will he have to face as he comes into office? To properly explain Pakistan and demystify all the complexities of the nation as briefly as possible, I have to start with a statement made by former UN official and current Indian National Congress MP Shashi Tharoor.
To paraphrase Voltaire on Prussia, in India the state has an army, in Pakistan the army has a state. And what that boils down to is that whereas in India you join the army to defend the country, in Pakistan you join the army to run the country. They have run the country for 33 years of the 70 that Hussein mentioned, and the rest of the other 37, they have run it from behind a civilian government, making very clear how far that government can go, what the red lines are, pulling the strings as appropriate, and throwing out the governments in question when they dared to go beyond what the military found acceptable.
Pakistan is not a democracy as we would recognise it in New Zealand. The people elect a prime minister, but the military have proven in the past four military coups of the nation's history that they are capable of installing a leader if the elected prime minister is too opposed to the political direction of the military structure. This has been the political status quo from the very beginning in Pakistan for a number of reasons. The first relates to the historical struggle of Indian Muslims to regain the political and social power that they lost as the Muslim sultanates fell apart, and Indian Hindus and Sikhs gained more political power through the 18th and 19th century. This ethno-religious power shift in India and the subsequent enslavement, violence, displacement and division of Indian Muslim communities left a scar on the collective psyche of many Indian Muslims and the desire for a strong Muslim state that never again would endure the embarrassment and indignity of conquest by Sikh or Hindus. Understanding this historical collective memory is integral to how Pakistan sees India. Even to this day, Muslims in India face widespread discrimination and even violence that has as recently as 2002 resulted in pogroms. What's more, the rise of Hindu nationalist power in India under Narendra Modi means that violent rhetoric and military standoffs between the two nations are becoming increasingly common. The second reason why the military control the nation this way, and the main reason most Pakistanis either support or remain ambivalent to the issue, is due to national unity, and this issue relates back to the 1947 partition. Pakistan was an artificially created state that was invented by the British in a desperate attempt to avoid a civil war that would most likely have resulted in a genocide, the likes of which would have caused the Holocaust to pale into insignificance. The peaceful protests of Mahatma Gandhi's majority Hindu INC in 1947 were already giving way to the beginnings of a bloody ethno-religious war that would most likely have ended in Indian Muslims being slaughtered en masse, and likewise Hindus in Pakistan experiencing the same fate. Considering that by 1947 the horrors of the Holocaust had come to light, an ethno-religious conflict was something the whole world desperately wanted to avoid.
What followed was mass migration and dreadful violence. It amounted to an attempt at ethnic cleansing. Around 12 million people were on the move. Muslims to Pakistan, Sikhs and Hindus to India. Approximately 1 million men, women and children died in the sectarian violence. The authorities on both sides were completely unprepared and appealed for calm. But it was too late. The British relinquished responsibility for the region, leaving India divided, and their leaders trying to get a grip on the bloody reality of partition. That division had unforeseen consequences, which still shape the Indian subcontinent today.
14 million people crossed a border to the nation of their respective faith in what remains one of the largest population transfers in history. It should also be mentioned that the ethno-religious identities of Hindus, Muslims and Sikhs that shaped these respective nations were not created by the British during the British Raj, but were instead encouraged on a case-by-case basis as the British East India Company were exploiting India for resources. Men who encouraged ethnic tension for financial gain include Warren Hastings, Robert Clive, Charles Napier and Henry Havelock. These men subsequently had towns named after them in the Hawke's Bay region of New Zealand. But because of partition, Pakistan is a mix of Muslims from different castes, ethnicities, sects and tribes and linguistic groups from all over India. The government feared the potential for it to erupt into even more violence. Therefore, the military came to the fore as a figurehead of unity and strength to prevent any one group consolidating power and plunging the nation into their own ethno-religious civil war. And it has still remained that way to this day. Instead, the aim of the military was to unite Pakistan under Islam as a strong state in opposition to a larger Indian nation they see as an existential threat to Islam on the Indian subcontinent. These are the conditions under which a Pakistani Prime Minister is elected. So knowing this, I'm going to introduce new Prime Minister Imran Khan, firstly in the context most New Zealanders would probably recognise him.
Slow ball again, they'll get one. There was nothing he could do about that. Good one from Imran, that ball. So 7 for 262.
Big hit. It's gone for six. It's going all the way. That's six over half.
Talk about good timing. That was beautifully struck. And if ever Pakistan needed six runs, this was the moment for it.
It was telecast. He's pulled it. Man out there at square leg. He's defending. It's going fine. It could go all the way. He's coming around quickly. We die. That's four runs, and Pakistan have won the first semi-final at Eden Park. A magnificent performance by Javed Miandad, Inzamin Al-Haq.
Yes, that was the current Pakistani Prime Minister leading their national cricket team to victory over the Black Caps at Eden Park in the 1992 Cricket World Cup, and he subsequently led the team to Pakistan's first ever Cricket World Cup victory. Imran Khan is an ethnically Pashtun man who came from a privileged upper-middle class background. He was educated in a private English boarding school, gained a PPE degree with honours from Oxford, but came to prominence as a cricket player and is still to this day regarded as one of Pakistan's best all-rounders. He's previously engaged in philanthropy and charitable work alongside UNICEF in promoting health and immunisation for children in Pakistan, and has also helped set up Pakistan's first and only dedicated cancer treatment centre. In 1996, he set up his party, the PTI, or Pakistan Movement for Justice, which grew to be one of the top three parties in the country, finally giving voters a third choice. The party runs on the promise of building an egalitarian Islamic democracy, which includes building a welfare welfare state, achieving universal literacy, halting drone strikes on Pakistani soil, and most controversially for the nation, putting the military back into civilian control. His party's history has been rocky, however. He supported General Musharraf's military coup in 1999 in the hope he would flush out corruption and nepotism, but 8 years later he was made a political prisoner, placed under house arrest, and he later went into hiding after he protested Musharraf running for Prime Minister without resigning as an army chief. He later became a figurehead of Pakistan's anti-establishment and became well known for supporting liberal social causes, as well as more left-wing calls for social justice and equality. His message resonated with young and poor voters alike, who were tired of the nepotism and corruption of both establishment parties and wanted a political change. This is an example of one of his views on economic equality.
What Pakistan has to do is to follow China's example, where they lift people out of poverty. You cannot have a few rich people in a sea of poverty, which is what is happening in Pakistan. What we want is to make policies, education, health, employment, everything should be to lift people out of poverty. And actually we have meetings with the Chinese of all the steps they took to reduce poverty.
The problem Khan will have, however, will be to reconcile the desires of the liberal middle-class urbanites with conservative, often hardline rural tribes. He is a populist who has something to offer to both sides, yet the differences in Pakistani society could be his downfall. In fact, his biggest controversy has been the support he has gained from the Pakistani Taliban in response to his policy on reducing drone strikes and protecting Pashtun tribes from institutionalized discrimination and government-perpetrated brutality. However, by contrast, he has condemned the Taliban for the forced conversion and intimidation of Kashmiris, claiming it to be un-Islamic. Khan also needs to think about India. Indian media has been wary of Khan, and Khan has made statements against President Modi in the past, calling him anti-Pakistani and accusing him of wishing corruption to be the downfall of the nation. India will be skeptical of his reconciliatory tone on Kashmir and other border disputes, but if he does follow through as a liberal, moderate, albeit nationalistic leader, it could severely harm the Hindu nationalist support base Modi will need to court in India's election next year. But his biggest trial will be with the military. A party policy of his has been civilian reacquisition of control, and considering the traditionally militaristic nature of Pakistani politics, the way in which it has historically retained national stability, and its habit of removing leaders they disapprove of, he needs to walk a fine line. The military stands at the heart of Pakistan's national identity, and if he crosses the military too far, Pakistan may see its fifth military takeover. As for Khan's own political policies, he marks a dramatic shift for Pakistan. On the one hand, he may thaw relations with India. On the other, he is a hard nationalist looking to follow in the footsteps of founder Muhammad Ali Jinnah. Khan is a liberal in the sense that he believes in pacifist solutions and economic equality, but socially, although he has stood in support of giving religious minorities greater representation, he believes in Muslims following Muslim principles and champions an Islamic lifestyle. He is a man of contradictions. One thing is for certain, however, he does not like Donald Trump, and as the Muslim world moves further away from the US and as Trump warms to Modi in India, it looks like one of America's traditionally staunchest majority Muslim allies will turn to China instead. In any case, the way in which Khan broke the duopoly of Pakistani politics is monumental in itself, and if his dialogue of reconciliation and peaceful solutions can extend to cross-border dialogue with India, it may potentially mark a new era for India-Pakistan relations.
Yep, and so, yeah, that's kind of what's going on in Pakistan at the moment, and I'm kind of going to pose a question to the audience here a little bit, whereby I'm going to ask, you know, I mean, Pakistan's just elected their number one cricketer to there to be prime minister, admittedly after a fairly long political career, but still. So my question would be, here in New Zealand, if an All Black or a Black Cap set up a political party and turned from sports politics, would you vote for them?
Well, people voted for John Key, who is a businessman.
Well, all I can say is that for Imran Khan, it's a very sticky wicket ahead. And he's going to have to dig in because the pitch will be taking turn from day one.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God, I got the sport joke. I usually don't.
That's my dad joke for the day.
Well done.
Well, yeah, so no, it's quite amazing that a man who is led beat the Black Caps at Eden Park, just down the road from where
Please
we are.
Please stop reminding
24
us.
Years, 26 years ago.
Please stop reminding us.
Will, you know, is now running Pakistan.
Are you a big cricket fan, Sam?
I love cricket. It's a religion to me, literally.
Hey, that reminds me of a text that we've got from Paul, which he says that Islam is a religion, not a culture. The two seem to be interchanged often. History has taught us that we should be free to criticise religion. Sounds like these two jokers go way beyond that, and he means the people in your story,
yes.
Sam,
the Canadians coming to it. I think there are definite racial undertones to this criticism of Islam. Like,
they definitely do go far
beyond that. They're not talking about a Pakeha Muslim, are they? They're talking about people from Africa and the Middle East, brown people, basically.
I will say, though, that I think, you're right, Islam is a religion, not a culture, but religion and culture influence each other so much.
I should go back to my story, actually, where I was talking about the military in Pakistan. That is literally the reason why they have military control, is because there's so many different cultures and ethnicities and languages and classes within Islam in Pakistan. If the military wasn't there from day one, the country would have just become a bloodbath.
Right.
So, like, you know, Islam has cultures within it and lots of different variations, as Christianity does.
Well, there also seems to be the superiority complex around Christianity versus Muslim, and people say Christianity, you know, is better than Islam, essentially.
But also, I mean, if you look at secularity in France, they act like there is no religion in France, but it's their culture is so intertwined with Christianity. It's just the idea that Christian is, and I'm putting in quotation marks, normal or non-threatening in the arrival of something that is perceived as threatening creates this storm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Indians do the same as well. Everyone thinks Mahatma Gandhi was this great secular man, but actually he was kind of more like, I'm a secularist, but I'm going to base my peaceful resistance upon Hindu values. So it was kind of sort of neither here nor there. So it's sort of like India's like one of those countries. It's like secular, but sort of not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Connor.
That's all good.
Text us in your thoughts anyway.
For sure.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.